So school's back, fall's here. Here we are. For those who are visiting, don't know me, I'm Scott, one of the pastors here, along with Tab and the rest of our team. So it's good to be back into the routine of things, I think. I hope you've had a good summer. Starting back in March or that, let me give some context here. Over the last number of years, the church throughout North America has felt, gosh, I think we dropped the ball in the whole area of making disciples. The one thing Jesus said, make sure you don't forget, gosh, somehow it slipped. We did really well at making good shows and having, you know, good experiences at the church when people came. But when our world got shaken, the church got shaken with it. And the talk now, the talk throughout the churches is, you know what, we got to zero back in here. We got to zero in on the whole area of discipleship. And for me, it was just, I sensed the Lord saying back into what we call the Sermon on the Mount. And the Sermon on the Mount is found in Matthew 5, 6, and 7. But man, and for those who, if you're not familiar with Scripture, it's in the New Testament, first book. Chapters 5, 6, and 7 is this teaching Jesus gives that is profound teaching. I would call it his magnum opus. In other words, the teaching that caps all of his teachings, that embodies everything he is and the life he calls us to. And I would call it the summit. And I'm convinced here, and I said this to Tab last night, that I am convinced, absolutely 100% convinced. And there's not too many things I'm 100% certain of anything, but this I am, that the Jesus way of life is the answer to our world's ills and ailments that we suffer with. The challenge is, are we willing to walk it? Because Jesus' teachings are not easy, not at all. Even the most scholarly religious people of his time were taken aback by what he had to say, because he was very pointed, very kind and compassionate, but very certain of what he was saying. And so we've been journeying through that. We got through it. We entered into chapter 6 there, and we're still taking a good look at it, and we're going to resume that. Now, so here's the thing. So funny thing happened yesterday. I was just going over it, doing a review, because what I saw today looking like was like there would be a recap and then we'd resume back in. And so I was going over the recap, and when I came to the end of the recap, because I pray about this stuff, right? Because if I don't, I know I'm hooped. But I heard, when I came to the end of just looking over what I had written for a recap, I heard the words, "You're done." What do you mean I'm done? Done what? Fired? What do you mean done? You know, expand on that. Need help? No, you're done. You're done. Well, I can't be done. It's not long enough. No, you're done. Go over it again. You're done. What about the next part? Like, come on. You're done. And I was like, okay. And when I went through it again, it was like, okay, I see what it is you're trying to get at. So we're going to go there. So the whole thing with following Jesus, the challenge that we face is this. We are predisposed to live opposite of what Jesus calls us to. Now, you'll hear different people when they speak about the kingdom of God or Jesus coming, bringing the kingdom, that we talk about the upside down kingdom, that it's upside down to what our world is. And I counter that. I actually believe that we are upside down and Jesus comes in, you know, right side up. And we go, what are you doing? And he's going, what are you doing? You're actually doing it the wrong way. But we are predisposed to going the opposite way. That's why it's so easy to grab the Snickers bar, more challenging to grab the broccoli, right? It's one of those mysteries of life, right? But it's that seed that is within humanity that bears resemblance of rebellion. We want our independence. We want to do it our way. It's that selfishness. A lot of where relationships break down is rooted in selfishness, is what it's rooted in. The interesting thing about the Sermon on the Mount, I said it was 5, 6, and 7. It actually starts with in Matthew 4, where Jesus announces that the kingdom of God is here. And what Matthew records is that Jesus goes throughout the towns and villages and cities teaching healing, bringing healing to people. And people are coming from all over with all types of ailments, injuries, diseases, sicknesses, and they're getting healed. And it doesn't matter if they're of the Jewish faith or if they're of Gentiles. If they're coming looking for Jesus, Jesus just like randomly throws out this healing to people, whoever wants it. And you see this generosity that comes out. So that's chapter 4, and that's how chapter 4 ends, is this all this healing that is going out, and people are just amazed at what's happening, and they want to see who is this person? Who is this man? What is he teaching? And they're so interested in it. And Jesus, he sits down and he starts his teaching. And his teaching is about this generosity, how it looks. And we know what he says. We call it the Beatitudes, but it's really Jesus just saying, here's how God is generous towards you. Who does God bless? He blesses the poor who know their spiritual need for God, who know their need for God. Who does he bless? He blesses those who mourn, who have mourning loss. And I'm sure many of us right now are experiencing some form of loss, that God is with us in that. Who is God for? Who does God bless? He blesses the humble, he goes on to say. He blesses those who are hungry and thirsty to see justice in this world, because the world is rampant with injustices. Who does he go after? He's with the people who show mercy. He's with those who are pure in heart. He's with those who work for peace, the peacemakers, who want to see shalom come into the world. And he's also with the persecuted ones. And what we tend to do is we call that the Beatitudes, and we separate that and we say, here's the Beatitudes. You know what a fun exercise is to do, though? Especially now that we have everything is digital and we have everything on our computer, you can cut and paste and do all this funny stuff. Is because what publishers of the different versions of Bible do, and they do it for our help, is everything's broken down into verses and they break things down into, you know, teaching portions. They have subheadings for everything. And sometimes we think those subheadings are part of Scripture. And by the way, they're not, right? They're just publishers have put in different titles. And so we tend to read things in blocks. We'll even read things in just one verse without the context of the rest. And sometimes it's nice just to put everything together and just read it as if Matthew came to your house, dropped in your mailbox a gospel I wrote. Can you read this through? Because Matthew didn't go and separate things. He just did it. And here's something that's interesting. It's just interesting. So this is just something fun, okay? But it is interesting. So you got the Beatitudes. God blesses, you know, those who are poor, those who are mourning, and it goes down the list, right? And we come down to the last one being those who are persecuted, and then it stops, and then it goes to the next section, so we think. I want to read to you that last part and right into the next section. Just listen. I want you to listen. God blesses you when people mock you and persecute you and lie about you and say all sorts of evil things against you because you are my followers. Be happy about it. Be very glad, for a great reward awaits you in heaven. And remember, the ancient prophets were persecuted in the same way. You are the salt of the earth. When I read that, it was like, are you saying all these people who God blesses, that they are the salt of the earth? And I was like, well, that's interesting. Because what it exposed to me, and maybe not for you, I could be the odd duck, right? But what it exposed to me was I tended to read the Beatitudes that God is with these people. And then when I read, you are the salt of the earth, that I am the salt of the earth. You know what I mean? It was almost like a head in my head. That's them. This is me now. And it was like, God, it was like, when I read it, it was like, oh, us, we are all the salt of the earth. And I find that profound. I just find that so, so interesting. And then Jesus, in his Sermon on the Mount, he cuts right to the chase. He addresses the law, because the law is the big thing in the Jewish faith. They have 613 laws, right? And the religious people, the scholars in that, they know them. They have them memorized. And, of course, the big question out there that's hanging out there, are you coming to get rid of the law? We don't have to follow the law anymore, because you seem to not really follow it really religiously, Jesus. So what's the deal? And Jesus says, I didn't come to get rid of it. You know why? Because the law's going to stay there anyway, but that wasn't his purpose. His purpose, he said, I'm actually the fulfillment of the law. And what he was saying in that, which is so fascinating, is you can't fulfill, none of us, you, Scott, can't keep the law anyway. Because every time you go to try to keep it, you slip and you fall flat on your face, is what you do. That's called that desire that we have in us is to be right in our being, right in being. If you remember when we did the book, Live Like Jesus by Putty Putman, he talked about in his book there, righteousness, what it really is right in being. And we want to make ourselves right in being, but we can't do it. All of humanity has been trying. And what Jesus is saying here in fulfilling the law, I will be your righteousness. I will be your right in being. Me, I will. That's why he said, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the Pharisees, ouch, you're not getting it. You're not there. You're not there, right? And so he addressed that. He goes on to address the seeds that are in our heart that come out in our actions, you see. Things like the action of murder. And he addresses the seed. It's anger, right? Seeds like the action of adultery, seed of unfaithfulness that's there in your heart. Things like the action of divorce, he addresses the seed of meanness of heart. The action of needing to manipulate others with your language, because really what you want to do is control people. You want to manipulate, you want to dominate people, right? And then revenge. Why is there revenge in your hearts? Because you got hatred in your heart for one another. And then Jesus does this shift, this really gentle shift in his teaching. And he shifts to show us a better way. And so he says things like, I want you to love your enemies. I want you to love your enemies. I want you to pray. But when you pray, don't pray so other people can hear you. Pray to your Father. In fact, if you have a little room, go in your room. Pray to your Father. Because it's not for other people to see anyway. Because I know why you're doing that. You want people to think you're righteous. He said, don't do that. Jesus says, forgiveness. So important, right? And we're actually going to park on that for a little bit. Not today, but we're going to park on that for a bit. And then he talks about fasting, that when you fast, same reason, do it not to impress others. Do it for your Father. And who's in heaven, who sees. That's who. That's what it's all about. And so I thought that was a good recap. But I didn't know when he said, and you're done. There's more to say about that recap. I was like, okay, talk to me. And he took me to my journal entry I had on the day before, on Friday morning. Friday morning, I got up. It was one of those, I don't know if you must. You wake up in the middle of the night and your mind's just, you're going over your to-do list or something, or things are going, things you're thinking about. Or do you ever find that something that you've been trying to work on, you can't figure it, find out the answer. Your brain has actually been trying to think about it while you're sleeping, and then you wake up and you go, oh, I should do this. No? Okay. So, one of the funny things about me is that happens to me from time to time. I wake up, my mind's going, and that happened in Friday, and I know good sleep hygiene says, don't stay in bed longer than 15 minutes. If you can't get back to sleep, get up, go do something. So I got up, went downstairs, made myself a coffee, and went to the living room, sat down, and to have my time with Jesus, to chat. And my chatting goes, and I've explained this, you know, I journal on my computer, and I just write what I'm feeling, where I'm at, where my head's at. We just talk, whatever it is. And I just chat, and I just write stuff down. And that morning, I was, meh, that's how I was feeling. Not too impressed that I couldn't sleep. So I didn't start things right. But part of my conversation I had with Jesus, this is Friday morning, part of that conversation went like this. I'm going to read it to you. I wrote, well, Queen Elizabeth died yesterday, 96 years old, same age as my mom. I felt a sadness for her death because it seemed and felt like the world lost someone who led well. A decent leader who lived their life with honor and dignity towards herself and all others has died. That's what I wrote. And I just sat with that for a bit. And the feeling I was having was it was a sadness for the world, and it was like where we need, all, it seems like all the good people are going. And it was almost a sense of feeling just a bit of hope leaking out, right? Just like hope in the world leaking out. And as I'm sitting there with it, what I do here is, what about you? I'm like, what about me? And it was a sense of, why are you just sitting back? Because what I want is I want to see other leaders rise up, right? Where's these other good leaders that we can have in our world? We need them. And I heard, what about you? And it was the sense I was feeling is, you could live your life like that. If you choose, you could do it. Not be the queen, don't read that. No, but you could do it. And I was like, you're right, you could. And so I wrote down in my journal these words. But I can choose to live a life of honor, dignity, respect, and integrity. And above all, I can choose to love you, God, with all my being, to love my neighbor as myself. And in the midst of chaos, I can be peace to all others I encounter. I can lead myself and be that person in the world. I don't have to wait for someone else to step up. I can step up. That's what I wrote. Don't clap. I didn't realize what I was writing was God was going to use that. The sermon that Jesus preached, his magnum opus, presents to me, to all of us, a choice. We have a choice, guys. We have a choice. We can sit back. And I know we sing, God, let your kingdom come, but we sit back that we need you to come. But we have a choice that we can make to follow, to really seriously follow Jesus. Take his words seriously. Let me just unpack that a little bit. Because this is when the Lord started just say, you know, you can weigh this stuff up. But he calls us. He says, I see the life that's in the world. I'm showing you how to live real life, how life was intended to be lived on planet Earth. And it's not what you see and experience right now or ever. But I have life. And you know, John wrote in his gospel in chapter 10, I think it's verse 10 even, that Jesus says, I came to give life and give it to the full. And he unpacks it through his teachings. And here Matthew condenses that. And he says, this is what Jesus taught. And the other gospel writers as well encapsulate this teaching, this magnum opus of Jesus. Because he calls us to fly right side up. That's what he's calling us. And that's hard because we're so used to flying upside down that we think it's normal. And he's going, nope, nope, not normal, not at all, not at all.
And I was reminded then of the words that Moses, the prophet, spoke to the Israelites before they went into the promised land. It's found in Deuteronomy 30. And Moses says these words, "Today, I have given you the choice between life and death, between blessings and curses. Now I call on heaven and earth to witness the choice you make. And oh, that you would choose life so that you and your descendants might live." I just want to pause there for a second because there's more to this passage. I don't know if you noticed those words there in that second sentence, but now I call on heaven and earth to witness the choice you make. I'll tell you how I hear that when I read it yesterday was, it's like God went, there's your two choices. Choose. Heaven and earth is going to witness your choice. And I want to play the safe way, which is, let me think about it. That's honest, right? That's honest. Let me think about it. And I dare not say, I want to pray about it, right? Because that's, you know, that's where you duck, crawling to the table if you say that. But he gives us a choice. He's calling us. But what you need to also hear is this. God's longing for our best. Someone said that God wants the best for you. And he actually does. He actually wants the best for your life. And he's saying, choose life. Choose this. Please choose that. Choose it. And then he goes on. Moses goes on with the people. That you can make this choice by three things. Loving the Lord your God, is one. Obeying him, two. And committing yourself firmly to him. That third one is costly. But let me tell you why. And I just got to take analogy from my life. So, in 2004, when I accepted the offer to step in as senior pastor, one of the things I realized I probably need to do is I need to start looking after my health a little bit better. So I joined some little, it wasn't the greatest gym, it was okay. And I started this regimen, you know, three times a week, making sure I go. Ignored the diet totally. I drifted away from that. There was a bit of fear driven here because my two oldest brothers both had heart attacks at age 52 and fairly serious ones at that. That made me uneasy when I was hitting 48, 49. It was like, what do I do? What do I do? And I remembered clearly praying about it. God, what do I do about this? I don't want to compare it to this, but it was like God said, you got two choices. You can live life any way you want, like keep on going the way you're going, because I know the way I was eating was not good for my family. My family loves the sweets and the body just sucks the calories in and brutal force, but it affects our health badly. Like I have two older brothers, heart attacks, man, 52. And he says, you can do that route and go medication, live on medication for your life, or you can do this other route, clean up your eating and get exercising. And the other thing, what I sense the Lord saying, you're not special. So don't think you're going to be able to decide. You can abuse your body and you're going to be okay. Uh-uh, not going to happen. You're special, but you're not that special, right? Right? It was that. That's what I was faced with. And so I chose to go this way. But I want you to hear this. And I want you to hear. When I made that decision that I'm going to go work out regularly, and don't hear this as you should do this, okay? This is just me. When I made that decision and to change my diet, to change how I eat, made all those decisions to do that, that cost me, because I could sign up for a blog, I could listen to podcasts, I could buy magazines, I could do all that stuff, and that wouldn't change a thing. I had to change how I lived my life. I had to go through the house, for me, pick the stuff that I am susceptible to eat, throw it out, get rid of it. It had to be gone. Not buy it. Don't buy it. If I was going to work, you know, start exercising, I had to get real about it. Figure out what you like to do and do it. That meant, you know, start getting up earlier in the morning for me, because I'm a morning person, not an evening person. Start getting up, doing that. I had to adjust things in my life to make it a priority for me. Because it wasn't good enough for me just to, I could read about it. I could become knowledgeable. Big deal. Things had to change for me. And it cost me. It cost me. Because then I had to buy, you know, it was either gym membership or work out at home. And I'd rather work out at home than go to a sweaty gym. That was my thought. Right? And I'd rather do that. So it cost that way. It cost financially. It cost my time. Because rather than watching TV with a nice coffee in the morning or doing something like that, nope, had to get changed, get down there, get working out. When it came to when I decided I want to up that and start to run, cost me. Now I got it. Now my workouts are going to be a little bit longer. And I got it cost me in money, but I got to buy running shoes. And let me tell you, running shoes aren't like $50, not the ones I need for my trail running. I dropped $200 at some point, sometimes for a pair of shoes. Why? Because my ankles need it. I can't afford it. Things shift in my life. I change things. I stop doing this, start doing this. It's no different following Jesus. It's no different than being a Jesus follower. None of it's different. When you face challenges in your life, I got to think, I got to go, and I'm doing it more. I'm getting better. Jesus, what should I do here? Jesus says, you know what you got to do. And I go back, Jesus, that's really, really hard. One of the things is the next thing we go to within the Sermon on the Mount, which is forgiveness. You know, you spill my coffee, I can forgive you. But come on, don't we deal with hurts and pains from people that are sometimes just beyond forgiveness, like it seems, like it feels like? God, how do I forgive that person that? How does that work? That's not easy. That's a longer discussion, that longer thinking through we got to do there. But this following Jesus, guys, when we read the Sermon on the Mount, we can learn about it. You can listen to podcasts on it. You can buy the books I recommend. You can do all that stuff. But if you don't walk the stuff out, if you don't lace up and show up and sweat it out, what does it mean? I don't know what it means. Because I don't want to get into the, you know, does that mean I'm not saved then? I don't want to get in there. God's love for us, God's plan for us. God's a generous God, a merciful God. Don't want to go there. All I know this, I want to make sure I live the best life I can. And if I've come to the conclusion in my life that Jesus, you have the answers to the world's ills, then I know Jesus' question back to me, and Scott, what are you going to do about it? And the answer is, okay, I'm going to start walking this way. I might not, listen, it's taken me 18 years to get where I am today, health-wise. Oh, here's another thing I want to mention to you. I'm saying this not to us individually. I'm saying this to the church as a whole. Church in North America, you got to get real. You got to get real. We can choose. We can choose how we want to live. God offers us. Take this or that. But here's the other thing too. This thing about habit, that you, have you ever heard the thing, if you do something for 90 days, you'll create a good habit, right? If you do something good and you want to do that, do it for 90 days, you create a habit. Has anybody heard that? I've heard that. I like that because those things I remember, right? Because that sounds easy. 90 days. Okay, I can do 90 days. And you'll see workout programs and diets and all that. 90 days of this. You know, have a new life. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. Because here's why. When I think of habit, I think of something you just all of a sudden you find yourself doing. Biting your nails, you know, or whatever your bad habits are, picking your nose, whatever. You know, you find yourself doing it at the stoplight, right? And, right? And you just, you know, that's a habit. I have yet to find myself going, gosh, what am I doing? I'm eating broccoli. Man. Hasn't become a habit yet. I've never, you know, all of a sudden find myself, oh, I'm working out here. I didn't realize I was doing that. Never happened. Every time I got to make a decision, solid decision, this, I know the goal I want to live, where I want to end up, and I got to go that way. And I'm committed to that. So in that, in those words where you read, when Moses says to the people, you make this choice by loving the Lord your God, obeying him, and committing yourself firmly to him, right there. This is the key to your life. If you want the life, that's how. Bang on for Moses. Well, actually, it was the God speaking through Moses to the people. But committing yourself firmly to him that you're in. You know it's going to cost, but you know it's worth the cost. And for me, I do not want to exit this life going, darn, wish I had done it differently. Because that will bite if that happens. I don't want that. I want to exit life going, I did my best. I did my best. Right? It's what I want. And that's what we can choose. We can choose. We can choose this. Remember what I wrote down in my journal? If I change it to us, but we can choose to live a life of honor and dignity, respect and integrity. Above all, we can choose to love you, God, with all our beings, to love our neighbor as ourselves, that in the midst of chaos, we can be peace to all others we encounter. We can lead ourselves and be those people in the world. We don't have to wait for someone else to step up. We can step up. We can. We can make it. We can make a choice, guys. I want you to hear that. You can make a choice. Yes, I have a propensity for donuts. But if I come to donuts and broccoli, and don't confuse me, I'm not talking about addictions here, okay? No matter how hard I think I can tell myself how hard it is to resist that donut, I can. I can actually make a choice and say no to donut, yes to broccoli. I can actually do that. Try it sometime. You'll be amazed. You'll be absolutely amazed that you actually have the power to choose. You actually do. And God sets before us. He says, you got before you life and death, you know, prosperity and disaster. Pick. Joshua did the same to the people, right? Right? He said to the people at the end of his life, hey, you got all these gods of the other nations. You can worship them. Or you can worship the God of Israel. But as for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. Joshua made a choice. And he offered choices to others. Hey, if you want that God over there, go for it. But I know what I'm doing. That's what we want to be. Okay, I got to shut up. You know what? This is, you know, you can sidestep all of this stuff. At some point, though, you got to face the question. It's there before you. And what do you say to God? What do you say to God about all this? What do you say with Moses' question I placed before you? What do you say to Jesus' call, come, follow me? Because to go follow him is loving the Lord your God, obeying him, and committing yourself firmly to him. It's the key to life. It's the key to life. It's the key to living the life. It's the key. God, we want your life. We want the life you offer. We want that.